the sound of rioting in Ferguson, Missouri 4 years ago after Michael Brown was shot by a police officer. And it was video that gripped the world for days, and now it's 4 years later. What is Ferguson like today? Is there a future in Ferguson? And how does the Ferguson narrative fit the national narrative on race relations and other things? I'm Scott Simon, and this is Simon Says, and our guest is Paul Brown, who grew up in Ferguson. He's a talk show host in St. Louis, a journalist of note, and he has firsthand stories to tell us. First of all, Paul, I could tell everybody the biography of you, but I prefer that the guests tell their own story. Tell our audience all about Paul Brown, what you're doing now, and what you've done in the past.
Hi, Scott. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I write a column for the Ladue News, which is a magazine in St. Louis. I'm a columnist there, and I just write about interesting people in St. Louis. And I've had a chance to write about the things that have been going on in Ferguson. I still keep my hand in the writing part of it. But then I do some radio talk shows in St. Louis on KFNS radio. I've done on KTRS, and I was on KMOX radio, which is the voice of St. Louis, was on there for several years, and I've done television in the past. My main responsibility now, believe it or not, is caring for my mother, and she lives with me, and she's 96 years old, and so I'm in the boat with a lot of people my age who, if their parents are still with us, with them, they need a lot of care, and thankfully, I've got my mom, and she's, she's an inspiration that she just keeps hanging on, and I still get to hear stories about the good old days. She grew up in St. Louis, born in 1921, and so I hear a lot of stories about what St. Louis was like back in those days as well. So that's what keeps me busy, it is a challenge, like I say, trying to take care of an elderly parent and try to do things in your life. I've got a couple of young daughters, and one's just going off to college here very soon, and another one who's 12 years old who is 12 going on 25, and we all know how that goes. So those are the things that keep me busy these days.
You grew up in Ferguson. Let's turn the clock to 4 years ago. Do you remember where you were and how you heard about Michael Brown being shot and what was developing on those days, August 8th and 9th?
Well, obviously the narrative right from the start was slanted in one direction. I actually, believe it or not, I was down in the city of St. Louis, and I was at a family picnic. We've mentored some families from the city through church organizations, and there's a couple of families that we literally have been close friends with for 50 years. So I was actually at the home of a lady that we've known for all of these years who has raised her family in the city of St. Louis, and I was with a young man named Derek Smith. And so we were talking about what was happening in Ferguson, and, you know, they were all very skeptical because they lived the life of, you know, knowing what it's like to be under the eye of police, living in the city of St. Louis, which, of course, is notorious for its violence in certain parts of the city, in the black and more impoverished parts of the city. As everybody knows, St. Louis is often on the number one on the list of rankings for most violent cities in America. So I was at a family picnic with old friends, talking with folks who have impacted firsthand by police violence and by crime and drug use and everything else. And they were very skeptical at that time. And I was trying to say, hey, let's wait and see what the facts are. These things aren't often what they appear to be. And the narrative at the time was he was running away from the police and they shot him in the back. And so that's the narrative that was out there. He had his hands up and was trying to surrender, and the police officer just executed him. That was, which is often the case. And as we know, through the intense investigation, Department of Justice, simply wasn't the case.
Let's stay right there with how we first heard about this, and I'll share my narrative in a few minutes. But at first, there were a lot of people gathering in Canfield Gardens. That's the area in Ferguson
right.
where the incident took place, where Michael Brown was shot and killed. Right. At first, people just gathered and weren't doing anything in a riot or violent. What changed?
Well, I think that the big thing and where the police really messed up was that after Michael Brown was shot and killed, the paramedics, the emergency people were trying to get there. He was obviously dead. He was obviously dead. He had been shot, and I believe that the fatal shot was in the head. So he was down. He was and rather than whisk an ambulance in there, attempt to do some resuscitation, they realized he was dead, so there's no use to try to rush him to the hospital. When in reality, they probably should have at least given it a try. And that would have, it would have been good for, you know, just to make sure that there was no chance he could be resuscitated. But the problem was, is that they let the body lay in the middle of the street. Not for just 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes. It was in the street for 3 hours. Now, you get a lot of people that are, now they covered the body up after a amount of time, but the body laying in the street, hot summer day in St. Louis, this just looks merciless at this point. And, you know, so I can see where people were starting to get upset. There are people, there are family members showing up at the scene. They are wailing and sobbing. It was a big mistake to leave the body in the street for that long, and that's where the trouble started. So instantly you start to, you know, now the rumors start to go, how did it happen? Oh, he was standing up and the policeman just shot him while he was trying to surrender. And then the narrative came out that here he was this young man who had just graduated from high school and was trying to get into a technical school to learn to be an air conditioning repair person. And I will give Michael Brown credit. He at least did finish high school, which is something that a lot of kids his age never bother to do. He lived, I'm not even sure if he actually lived full time in those Canfield apartments. He didn't go to school in that area. He went to school at Normandy High School. So his grandmother may have lived in those apartments. His mother and father were not really a day-to-day part of his lives, of his life. That's what happened, was that when he went down and was left in the street, the blood started to boil. Literally, as it seeped into the asphalt, and people just became enraged by the sight of this blood-stained street on a hot day in August.
4 years later, what's it like in Ferguson today, Paul?
Well, Scott, just like it is in many parts of urban areas and cities in around the United States, there's almost two parts of Ferguson. There's one part of Ferguson, which is the older part, the established part, nice homes, beautiful homes in Ferguson still to this day. 100-year-old homes, turn of the century, mansions even. Ferguson was a very, very, very strong municipality in St. Louis County. It was a nice place to live, a great place to grow up, and a great place to raise your family. And then there was the part of Ferguson, there is the part of Ferguson today that is much lower income, a lot of Section 8 housing, closer to the city of St. Louis. And that's where this happened, where Canfield Apartments was. To be honest, growing up in Ferguson, where Canfield Apartments was, I didn't even know that that was part of St. Louis. I thought it was part of Jennings, which is a much more impoverished section of St. Louis County. I think, though, that the biggest difference today, as opposed to pre-Michael Brown, is the impact of the Ferguson effect. And that is something that some officials have tried to downplay. Some educators say simply just is not the case. But I know from people who live there that the Ferguson effect is very real. The Ferguson effect, as you've probably heard it called, is the reaction by police officers to do less to enforce laws, especially to enforce minor laws, traffic laws, et cetera. It simply just isn't worth it. When you pull somebody over, there is a chance that it could turn into an international incident. You could lose your livelihood. You could lose everything, like the officer that was involved in the shooting with Michael Brown. He's basically had to go undercover and live his life. He lost his life. He lost his livelihood. He's living somewhere else and basically living in hiding. So what is happening now in Ferguson, from the people that I know that are still living there, is that the police just don't want to take action against most minor violations. So you have kids that are and people driving through the streets, and I hear this all over St. Louis as well and other cities. They know that they can act with impunity on most things because they know the police aren't going to mess with them. And it turns into the broken windows syndrome, where, you know, if you leave a broken window in a building, then the rest of the building will soon deteriorate. And then the neighborhood deteriorates. And I think that's what's happening. And it's of great concern to the people who live in Ferguson, who are desperately trying to keep it as a good place to live, like it used to be back in the day. It will never be like it was before. But like I said, there are still some very nice parts of Ferguson, even to this day.
Yeah. My personal perspective for my audience, if you aren't aware of it, at the time that Michael Brown was shot 4 years ago in Ferguson, Missouri, I lived and worked as a manager of a self-storage facility 4 miles away from what I call the ground zero of rioting in Ferguson. At least 36 of my customers lived within a half mile of the rioting that you saw on television. I can tell you firsthand that the people who were my customers that lived there said the same thing that Paul just said, that afterwards police stopped enforcing many laws, that people started committing more crimes, albeit small crimes, such as Paul said, broken windows, things like that, the petty things. What I found interesting, Paul, that when I started reading up on preparing for this interview, it stood out, is that the mayor of Ferguson, Missouri, is still the same, that they did not throw him out of office, correct?
Yeah, they even had an election. James Knowles is his name. And he's, you know, I mean, it's a thankless job. I'm not even sure if it's a paid position. He has another job. He has a family. He's trying to maintain his property values. He has been, you know, demonized in some sections as being this heartless, you know, racist kind of person. And he's just somebody who wants to keep Ferguson as a nice place to live. He was reelected, actually, between when the rioting happened and today. He's in a lot of ways powerless to do anything. The city, and I won't say that the city wasn't operating with some prejudice. I mean, let's face it, a lot of small governments are influenced by racism. There is some racism in all parts of our society.
Sure.
it's hard to escape. And, you know, the slightest incidents were just magnified when the defense went back and started looking at different things and looking at people's emails. And if there was any reference made to anything that was not just very politically correct, it was very much magnified. But the mayor is there still. He's a decent guy. He was put into an incredibly difficult situation where all of a sudden this relatively sleepy little suburban community in north of St. Louis City turns into ground zero for international race relations. It was an unwinnable situation for him, but somehow he's managed to hold on, and they're trying to deal with the harsh penalties that were imposed on them, the sanctions and requirements that the Department of Justice forced on them and said, if you don't do this, we will sue you, we will bankrupt you, your city will be no more. So they're trying to do, and of course, a lot of these things are bureaucratic requirements, having different people to do things that probably aren't as necessary as picking up the trash, providing fire and police service, keeping the streets maintained. You know, there's a lot of other social requirements that are now very expensive and difficult for the city to maintain. But they're able to do it, and they're doing the best they can with less money because the federal government decided to sanction them. One thing that's interesting about that is that the report that came from the Department of Justice, there were two reports, one on the actual shooting itself and then one on the city and the police department overall. While it said that the city and the police department were basically prejudiced and that there was racism within the ranks of the police department and parts of city government, apparently, according to the report, the only person that did his job correctly that day was the officer that was involved in the shooting. His actions, according to the Department of Justice and Barack Obama's Department of Justice, clearly exonerated him and said that he acted in a reasonable way, considering the situation that he was involved in, where you had this person who had just committed a crime, a strong-armed robbery, was encountered, was belligerent, attempted to take the gun away from the officer. A shot was fired inside the car because of the struggle for the officer's gun, as Michael Brown was reaching into the car, trying to take the gun away from the officer. The gun went off. Michael Brown was actually shot, grazed by that bullet. So apparently, though, according to the Department of Justice, the city of Ferguson was horribly racist, but the one person who was doing his job correctly was the officer involved in the shooting.
A couple of more questions with Paul Brown, talking about the four-year anniversary of the rioting in Ferguson. Just a reminder for our Simon Says listeners, we have a second part of this dialogue, and we'll be interviewing Nick Kasoff, who is a Ferguson resident now and a businessman in Ferguson, and he'll give us his perspective on the rioting 4 years later. Is the Ferguson incident a license for people in the city of St. Louis? For our listeners that don't understand, Ferguson's a suburb, and the city of St. Louis is not that far away, just maybe 5 miles away. And there have been incidents in the city of St. Louis where there has been not rioting, but pretty close to it in the past 4 years. So I want to say,
in the days that followed and the weeks that followed, there were other incidents that happened in St. Louis. There was rioting in St. Louis that carried over. You know, it went on for about a year, I'd say, really. There was on and off incidents that happened, depending on what was going on around St. Louis. But everything always came back to Ferguson. And Ferguson still is a focal point for you know, everything. When you talk about race relations in the United States today, really, Ferguson was the nexus for the discussion about modern-day race relations and police relations.
It just seems like now, since August 9th, 2014, anytime there's an incident in an urban area, it's a license for people to gather, and it's almost a license for people to do anything they want. And I coin it on my website, the United States of Anything Goes. Am I right or wrong?
Well, I think the police would probably say that they do their best to stop any widespread looting and rioting. I'm seeing it less and less. And one of the things that I think has – one of the positive things that came from all of this, if there is a positive thing, that people have been able to talk to each other in more of an open and frank way than they may have been able to before. I have found common ground with black people that I didn't know before Ferguson, who I've been able to get to know and to talk to, who amazingly don't toe the party line when it comes to, you know, the police are always bad and they're all racist and they're all out to kill us at every opportunity. I've encountered several people who are very pro-police, African-American people who are very pro-police, very pro-law and order, and they want their communities to be safe just like everybody else does. And they're fighting a culture and that really in some cases glorifies violence, glorifies the thug life, glorifies horrible treatment of women. It's really kind of tragic to see that there are people that really want their communities to be good, safe places to live, and they are completely outnumbered and surrounded by people who just really apparently don't value the same things that a lot of other people in the United States value.
We'll talk about this topic every year, Paul, as long as Simon Says is running as a podcast. Thank you for talking about that, and we look forward to joining you later this week when we have some bonus content with you about the state of Missouri after Governor Eric Greitens resigns and whether or not Missouri has recovered enough to get away from the perception that it is a corrupt state. Paul, thanks for being with us for Talk About Ferguson.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Scott.
That's Paul Brown. You can hear him. Let's close out. Tell us about KFNS Radio and where they can listen online and how to connect with you online.
The best place to catch up with me is on Facebook. I put all the connections and all the links to all my radio work on there, as well as the columns that I write in St. Louis. That's probably the best way. Paul Brown, Ladue News on Facebook.
That's Paul Brown. I'm Scott Simon. This is Simon Says, and we invite you to subscribe, not just at my website, SimonSaysStories.com, but you can also subscribe at iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. We have links on my website to those three locations. Paul Brown will join us later this week to talk about the state of Missouri after the resignation of Missouri Governor Eric Greitens. We hope you enjoyed this episode about Ferguson and the rioting 4 years ago. A little later on this week, you'll hear from Nick Kasoff, a Ferguson resident and businessman who will give us his perspective on life today in that St. Louis suburban community. I'm Scott Simon for Simon Says, and we'll see you for just a while.